Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can get $50 off towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lunch and using the promo code lunch at checkout. That's casper.com/lunch. Much more on that a little bit later in the conversation. Jim, for the second consecutive Monday, our good martini comes to us from the U.S. Supreme Court. Hopefully that's a pattern that continues throughout the month of June when a lot of the big decisions come down. NBC News, in a 5-4 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court gave Ohio a victory Monday in a fight over the state's method for removing people from the voter rolls, a practice that civil rights groups said discourages minority turnout. At least a dozen other politically conservative states said they would adopt a similar practice if Ohio prevailed as a way of keeping their voter registration lists accurate and up to date. All states have procedures for removing voters from their registration lists. The people who have moved are no longer eligible to vote in a given precinct and so forth. The issue before the Supreme Court was whether a voter's decision to sit out a certain number of elections could also be the trigger for that effort. Justice Samuel Alito, who wrote the majority opinion, said the court's job was not to decide whether Ohio's supplemental process is the ideal method for keeping its voting rolls up to date. The only question before us, he says, is whether it violates federal law. It does not. Just to be specific, Ohio election officials send notices to anyone who fails to cast a ballot during a two-year period. People who do not respond to that and then don't vote over the next 4 years, including in two more federal elections, are dropped from the list of registered voters. So, Jim, there's a couple different ways you could look at this. First of all, we know from the Eric Holder days of the Justice Department that they were resistant literally to any effort to update voter rolls, including just taking out people who have died and so forth, and people maybe who have moved. I have no idea how this is supposedly going to discourage minority turnout if they're not turning out anyway. And people still get mail, I'm pretty sure, to get that notice from the government. But still, sitting out 6 years, I'm not sure that should make you have to go through the process again. So what's your take on all this?
Sure. This strikes me as a perfectly decided decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, Greg. And one of the things is, like, as he points out, Alito says in that majority decision, the argument is not, is this ideal? Is this perfect? I'm open to the argument that 6 years is too short a time for you to be removed from the rolls. I could see people saying, look, you know, some people just aren't into politics for a while. This doesn't mean you should unregister them. We have a process for changing the laws of Ohio. It's the legislative process in Ohio. And if people in Ohio think this law is unjust, and by the way, I think we're going to figure this out very quickly. If lots of people show up to vote in the 2020 presidential election and they are no longer registered to vote and they're like, hey, what happened? And the state says, well, look, you didn't vote for a bunch of years. We just took you out of the system. Then you're going to have a lot of people very, very upset and a lot of people, you know, angry and complaining and filing provisional ballots, things like that. So if Ohio suddenly has like a million provisional ballots that it has to sort through at the next presidential election, which is traditionally when you have the highest turnout among voters, then they'll say, okay, this was not a good idea. We really should lengthen that period of time. But I'm reminded of, I think, all the way back to the Bush-Gore recount fight in Florida. I remember there was this argument from Gore and his lawyers that basically contended that the intention to vote was what mattered more than anything else. So for the consideration of all ballots, and we all remember the dimpled Chad and hanging Chad and all these different things, there had always been this argument, this philosophy in U.S. voting law, that it was not enough to just want to vote or to have the intention to vote. You had to follow the rules. You had to follow the laws. This meant registering to vote. In some places, this meant having a photo ID. And so, you know, obviously, if you have a ballot and it says mark these two candidates for city council or whatever, and you mark three, well, then you have a spoiled ballot. They may not count that vote. Don't spill ink on your ballot. You know, don't do what you're supposed to do. You have to follow certain instructions if you want your vote to be counted. And as long as, you know, that obviously different rules differed by different jurisdictions, but there was not... none of these were inherently oppressive. None of these were inherently denying you a right to vote that you were entitled to. the state, you know, that voting, in addition to being a right, also had a certain amount of responsibility to go with it. You had to figure out ahead of time, if I want to vote, I better figure out how to vote. I better figure out how to register. Now, obviously, states have done things like the motor voter law and all kinds of things to make it easier for you. So I really don't think there's that many good excuses anymore. But this seems a bit like this. Like, if you want to vote, if the presidential election or any election matters to you, well, you probably should go and check to see if you're registered. I don't think that's an unbelievable imposition upon people. It usually doesn't take that long. You should go do that. If you, you should probably check to make sure that whatever information they have for you for on the voter rolls matches the information you have on your ID card. All of these things, you know, millions of people go through this process and never have a problem, right? If you choose not to vote for a couple of cycles, that's fine. You're there's no, you know, you have that right. But if you suddenly get more interested in politics again, and this vote is going to matter to you, well, then by golly, you probably go out and double check to make sure all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed before you go to vote to show up that day. So if, you know, if Ohio wants to change that law and give people more consecutive elections that they can sit out before they get removed from the rolls, fine. That's right. It's worth noting that the state tries to contact you if you haven't voted in too. It's not like they suddenly say, bloop, we're taking it away. You know, I think keeping yourself on the registered, you know, the voter rolls is a reasonable responsibility to ask of the American people. And it's, I'm kind of surprised. I'm not, I shouldn't be surprised. It's revealing, I think, that to four Supreme Court justices, that is indeed too much to ask. And the state has no right to take you off, even if you haven't voted for 6 years.
Jim, I was wondering, you know, John Kasich likes to present himself as a moderate guy, and a lot of folks on the left see this as a pretty aggressive play on updating the voter rolls. And I'm thinking, so why would John Kasich go around and support this through his administration? And here's the key, I think, for him. In addition to the fact that more than half the voters in Ohio fail to cast a ballot over a two-year period, those who receive the state's notices simply throw them away. What would be more upsetting to the son of a mailman for people who just chuck their mail into the trash?
You know, in the end, if you get a notice from the state, you should probably look at it, right?
Right, right.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of junk in there. Yes, there's going to be a lot of stuff. Apparently, somebody who was supposed to pay me for a gig I did like 2 years ago, Greg, a company went bankrupt. I got only paid in part. I get notices about the bankruptcy proceedings like every week, and it's complicated legal jargon. It's like, you know, a exceptionally small three-figure sum. I've just decided trying to get active in this law bankruptcy filing would cost me way more than the amount of money I was supposed to get. So, yes, I get that people ignore junk mail and all that kind of stuff. But look, when you make a decision to not pay attention to file, you know, mail from the state, things like this happen. You can't save people from their own bad decisions like this. So sorry, son of mailman. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
Exactly right. All right, let's move on to our bad martini, Jim. And this is pretty quick after the original part of this story was our good martini. Just last week, we were talking about how Keith Ellison of Minnesota was not running for re-election to the House of Representatives. He's going to run for Attorney General of Minnesota instead, at least for the time being, stay on as the number two figure at the Democratic National Committee. And so you kind of hope, hey, maybe the voters in Minnesota's 5th congressional district will pick someone a little more reasonable than Keith Ellison. And they still might. But this woman that's running for a seat in the 5th District, who describes herself in her Twitter profile as an intersectional feminist, and that could take us a while to fully break down, got a lot of attention over the weekend on Twitter for tweeting this: Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. Hashtag Gaza. Hashtag Palestine. Hashtag Israel. Her name is Ilhan Omar, and she, of course, is hoping to be the nominee for the Democrats in that district. So, Jim, Keith Ellison might be leaving the House, but if this woman becomes the nominee and then the likely winner of the general election, the ideology has gone nowhere.
So, Greg, when is the next meeting of Jews for Omar? Oh, I mean, I understand they rented a big hall, but lots of people are going to show up for that. Kind of interesting, I think, lesson from this, Greg. If I use the term milkshake duck, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. So it turned into an expression about news stories where, you know, you find somebody becomes usually a social media viral sensation. And the you know, imaginary example is, look at this. This is a duck that drinks milkshakes. And everybody watches the YouTube video and thinks it's hilarious and wonderful. And then a day or two later, oh, no, it turns out Milkshake Duck is actually a neo-Nazi. Oh, that's, you know, someone becomes famous for some unrelated reason. And then it turns out that they have some sort of deep, dark scandal or aspect of them that was hidden in the original story, and now everybody feels like. So every once in a while, you're going to get a story about, you know, this candidate turns out to be a neo-Nazi or a 9/11 truther or believes he was abducted by aliens, or, you know, there's all kinds of like strange and you know, abhorrent and horrific beliefs that people have. It certainly seems like the case of the guy who was basically a neo-Nazi in running for the House of Representatives in Illinois. It was a district that was extraordinarily Democratic. One of those seats where if you win the Democratic primary, you've basically won the election. But there was a guy who'd filed every year. There were two guys who would file pretty regularly. One would get, you know, win the Republican nomination and then get crushed in the general election. And eventually he got tired of that. And then there was the other guy who nobody knew very much about. And it turns out he's a neo-Nazi. And if there's anything the Blues Brothers have taught us, Greg, it's that there's nothing worse than an Illinois Nazi. This turned into a fairly big national story of Republicans nominate neo-Nazi for Congress, right? Well, it's not that Republicans got together and said, this guy with the funny little square mustache, he looks like a good candidate. It's that literally nobody else had filed for the seat. He had no chance of winning the general election and, you know, completely under the radar ended up winning the nomination and all that kind of stuff. But obviously, the reason this got huge national attention was this idea of, oh, my goodness, neo-Nazis in the Republican Party. Now, this idea to strengthen that association in your mind, to make you believe the Republican Party is being taken over by extremists and nut jobs and hateful people, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here's this woman running for Keith Ellison's seat, judging by the demographics of the district and Ellison's fairly easy victories over the years. She's probably got a pretty decent chance of winning the seat in November. If Illinois Nazi guy is going to be a national news story media, then I think this woman should be a national news media. Clearly, but she's, you know, her views on Israel are, you know, can't believe I'm saying this, Greg, kind of makes Ellison look like a moderate, doesn't it?
That's not easy.
I mean, all
That's
he did was easy. Hang around with Louis Farrakhan for a long time. My suspicion is that to a lot of folks in the media who lean far to the left but don't want to admit it, are either in public denial or deep-rooted, you know, internal psychological denial, would say that Illinois Nazi guy tells you something very important about the animating spirits of the Republican Party, yada, yada, yada. But they would look at this woman and say, there's no broader lesson to be learned. I don't think there's really – it doesn't really reflect the party as a whole. It's just a – one candidate in one district, and you can't draw any broader lessons from this. And it's, you know, a familiar, frustrating game for those of us on the right side of the aisle. If you want to say that's this woman is not reflective of the party as a whole, fine. It's, again, worth noting, she's got a good chance of winning in November, much better chance of winning than the guy in Illinois did. So we'll see how it shakes out. But the idea of having a you know, fairly virulent anti-Semite in Congress is not an engaging prospect, Greg.
And you're right, the double standard is absolutely exhausting. So if you are exhausted and you need a good night of rest after seeing this double standard play out time and time again, Casper is the way you want to go. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. After all, your natural geometry, all those triangles, trapezoids, and rhombuses, or rhombi, whatever it is, after all, you spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable.
The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amount of both sink and bounce. Its breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Casper now offers two other mattresses, the Wave and the Essential. Now, the Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body, while the Essential has a streamlined design at a price that will not keep you up at night. And remember, all Casper products are designed, developed, and assembled right here in the USA.
Prices are affordable because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you. Every Casper mattress is delivered right to your door in a small, how-do-they-do-that sized box. If you go on their website and look at this stuff, it's amazing just how much they can fit into that box. Plus, there's free shipping and hassle-free returns in all of the U.S. and Canada. Plus, you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. That's more than 3 months to check it out at no risk to you. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can get $50 off towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lunch and using promo code LUNCH at checkout. That's casper.com/lunch and use the promo code LUNCH for $50 off select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And as we all know, Mitt Romney is running for the U.S. Senate in Utah. He ran for president twice, 2008, was the nominee in 2012, was governor of Massachusetts, ran for Senate back in 1994 against Ted Kennedy, had it competitive there for a little while. So when Mitt Romney was running in 2012, the media was very tough on him for carrying his dog on top of the family car on vacation. They didn't really push back when super PACs accused Mitt Romney of horrible things, you know, giving women cancer and so forth. All sorts of things happened in that campaign. I don't want to steal your thunder on this. But the New York Times now has a profile piece on Mitt Romney, and they're talking about how he, you know, had sworn off running for office again after 2012, and then kind of the memory of his dad and his desire to serve, and this all came together for a Senate bid here in 2018. That's what most of the story is about. But the tweet that led into this and got a lot of conservatives fired up on Twitter yesterday is this, quote, "To many, Mitt Romney's earnestness now qualifies as refreshing. He does not swear. He does not drink. He does not age." Jimmy, he's just this wonderful, swell guy who 6 years ago was pure evil because he happened to be running against Barack Obama.
Greg, what about your gaffes? What about your gaffes? You may recall, yes. I believe Romney was on his overseas trip. I want to say it was either Germany or Poland or someplace like that. He's at some, I believe it was a wreath-laying event, right? You know, some sort of very solemn occasion. He's, you know, paying his respects, doing the sort of thing a presidential candidate is supposed to do. And some member of the traveling press corps with him, who had just the most melodious voice you could ever imagine, Greg. I can only imagine the loved ones of that reporter and how lucky they must feel to hear that voice at the end of every day. What about your gas? Just shrieking, right? You know, probably with a sense that violated the decorum of the event. But also, I think it just kind of, you know, that turned into a motto or a slogan of how the media perceived Mitt Romney, no matter what he was doing, no matter what he was. Now, I think it was before a couple of days before the 2016 election, Bill Maher, of all people, he didn't quite have a mea culpa, but he said something. He's like, you know, during a bit of a conversation on his show on HBO, he said, you know, it's time to level with people. We told you that George W. Bush and John McCain and Mitt Romney were the devil, and we were wrong. They're not the devil. And then so everybody's like, you know, ooh, you know, like, that's a bit of a surprise. It's a wonderful concession to hear from the likes of Bill Maher. And then he said, but Donald Trump is the devil. That's why we need you to vote against him. And it was, you know, back to the usual. Now, the point here being, I very much believe that the way that Mitt Romney got covered in 2012, that the way John McCain got covered in 2008, and I think you look at the Bush administration. Look, you can disagree with the policy views of these men. You can just, you know, and in fact, you and I on this podcast have. John McCain plenty of times is a guy who was a maverick, went against his own party a bunch of times. You know, it's not that these guys are above criticism. It is that the overall tone, both from the Democratic Party as a whole and their allies in the media, and a bunch of our listeners are probably just sitting up and saying, Jim, you're being redundant. that these folks just, you know, ripped into Romney and McCain and Bush. And basically just, you know, you pointed out some of the greatest hits, the Democratic ad that implied that Mitt Romney had given some steelworkers cancer. The Bain, you know, capital being this, you know, selfish, greedy, you know, monstrous, the little man from Monopoly and all that stuff. Like, you never know. Mitt Romney gave away his entire inheritance, right? He's given probably more to charity than almost any other billionaire on earth. I mean, he's a, you know, and everybody who deals with him, like Mitt Romney, for all of his career in politics and business, the consensus is always the same. And it's nice to say that he, you know, that they say that his style now qualifies as refreshing in the minds of the New York Times. That word now is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. None of this counted for anything in 2012. He was, you know, seen as the enemy. He was seen as somebody who had to be destroyed. So I suspect that a lot of Republicans looked at the experiences of Romney and McCain and watched them get turned into, in the case of McCain, you know, crazy grandpa warmonger. It's wonderful to see all these tributes to McCain now that he's fighting his last battle against cancer. It would have been nice to have some of that appreciation back in 2008. I actually don't think that would have changed the outcome. I think, you know, the Obama would have won either way. But man, oh man, they were absolutely determined to make him the enemy of the week, the Emmanuel Goldstein of 1984. They wanted to make you hate this person because they were afraid otherwise you might actually like him, you might actually vote for him. And that applies to Romney. and they probably still a whole bunch of Republicans. My suspicion is this is a lot of how we got Trump, because I think a lot of Republican primary voters, a lot of conservatives looked at this and said, you know what? If our guy is going to get painted as a monster, we might as well nominate a monster and get all the advantages of having the monster, right? Yes, Trump is coarse and he is crass and he is obnoxious and he attacks people. He's nasty. He has no respect for anyone. But you know what? The perception of the right was this is what it takes to win. I don't necessarily agree with this philosophy, but I can understand how it developed and where it came from. And this sort of on again, off again, like a light switch, where all of a sudden, because Romney and McCain are seen as alternatives to Trump, all of a sudden they become good guys again. And the New York Times not acknowledging the fact that they themselves were part of the New York Times ran the story about McCain allegedly having an affair with zero evidence.
Yep.
You're part of the problem, New York Times. And while it's nice for you to recognize once there's no longer a danger of John McCain or Mitt Romney getting elected president, now you can be nice to him again. It would be nice if you recognize they were the same guys all along. And the next time a Republican candidate comes along, whether it's Trump, whether it's after Trump, whether it's somebody else, see them as they are and don't turn them into monsters as part of the DNC get out the vote operation, because otherwise this is how you end up with people saying, you know what, I don't care about character. No matter how good the character is of our nominee, they're going to attack him and paint him as a monster anyway.
No, that's exactly
right. Happy Monday, everybody.
Exactly. Just you can look at two instances from that campaign to just sum it up. Number one, when Romney was talking about all the efforts he took to make sure women had positions in his administration as governor of Massachusetts, and he said binders full of women instead of women's resumes, and the media ran with that as a major attack. And then Joe Biden suggested to a predominantly black audience that Romney and Ryan would have them back in chains, and the media couldn't care less. So
Biden saying it is bad. The fact that everybody just kind of, you know, looked at their shoes and said, that wacky Joe Biden claiming Republicans will bring back slavery. What's he going to say next? You know, this kind of kid gloves treatment. And I'm really glad you made the point, because the idea is that I guess like some sort of, you know, villain from the 1960s Adam West Batman TV show, Greg, that Mitt Romney had built giant binders, giant, you know, binders, and the binder rings would go through the women. It was, oh, it's terrible. It's horrible. He's a monster. Yeah, so like that didn't even make much sense, but it was like almost like through willful belief, Democrats and liberals and media voices convinced themselves that saying binders full of women revealed some sort of dark, horrific, nightmarish element to the Romney psyche that was a core part of the war on women. And I'm sure,
right,
Greg, that a good portion of the donations to underwrite the Democrats' messaging about the war on women, you know, probably came from Harvey Weinstein.
Ah, good point. Yeah, he was bundling back then.
Yep.
Oh, wow. What a start to the week. And yes, it's only Monday. Have a good one, Jim.
See you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our good friends over at Casper. Get $50 off right now towards select mattresses, casper.com/lunch, and use the promo code lunch at checkout. And tune in again Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.